Thank you. All right. Oof. Have you ever been asked to do something that when you're doing it was like, this is foolish. This is ridiculous. This doesn't make any sense. Like, for example, I don't know if you've, in any of your work environments, you know, they've done the team building retreats or the team building activities, and you'll break into groups and they'll put like on your table like a bag of spaghetti and a bunch of marshmallows. And they'll be like, okay, you have 5 minutes to build the biggest tower using just spaghetti and marshmallows. Ready, go. And you're like, what in the world does this have to do with my job? This isn't teaching me teamwork. This is just dumb, right? Maybe that you've had that experience, or maybe you've had an experience where, you know, a friend roped you into, you know, training for and then running a 5K, right? Anybody ever been roped into something like that? Even though maybe you haven't run since you know, middle school gym class, and the whole time, you know, every part of you is screaming, why did I sign up for this? This is absolutely ridiculous. Or maybe you've had kind of a moment where you're driving with friends to some destination and you've punched the coordinates into your GPS, but the GPS begins to take you through like a cow pasture. Some of you have had that experience coming down to camp. Right? Because if you just put, you know, how to get to Little Mahoning Camp, it literally will take you through a cow pasture. If you don't know to go to Punxsutawney first and then to camp. But you've been in that moment when you're in the middle of somewhere and maybe the people in your car look at you and they're like, are you sure? Are you sure this is the way? This path doesn't make sense. As a matter of fact, I see a guy stepping out of his house now with the shotgun, floor it, we got to get out of here, right? But we've all probably been in situations where what we're doing, what we're being asked to do feels odd. It feels strange. It might feel a little uncomfortable, or maybe it just feels foolish. Now, take that feeling and apply it to something that has bigger stakes. Not just, you know, a team building activity or running a race or following a GPS coordinates, but following God. Following something that He has asked you to do. Even though He hasn't given you all the details. Even though He hasn't provided a roadmap. Even when it doesn't makes sense and feels a little foolish, even when it makes you feel like you're just walking around in circles. And that's a seed to where we're going today. Because here's the thing, faith often doesn't look courageous. Sometimes it just looks weird. It looks like staying the course when nothing has changed. It looks like obeying God's direction when you don't know what the outcome is going to be. It looks like sometimes just showing up day after day, week after week, month after month, even when the plan feels pointless because you're not seeing any real progress. Today we're gonna look at a story that speaks to that idea. A story where an entire group of people did something that felt ridiculous, but they did it anyway. They did it together, and God showed up. If you have your Bible, turn to Hebrews chapter 11. If you've not been with us, I think this is week 8, and we've got one more week in our series, Broken People, Bold Faith. It's been a character study through Hebrews 11, some of the men and women that God highlights as being people of faith. And what we've discovered is that all of them were broken people. And the good news is God uses broken people because we've said it time and time again, broken people are the only kind of people there are. We're all broken in different ways. And so we've looked at different people, their faith, but we've also highlighted their brokenness. And today, we want to just read one verse from Hebrews 11, verse 30. Here's what the Hebrew writer says. It's simply this. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they had encircled for 7 days. That's it. That's the whole part of Hebrews 11 that we're going to try to unpack today. Now, who is this verse talking about? What's the person that comes to mind when you think about Hebrews 11:30? Anybody? A little bit louder, ready? Okay, good. You are correct. However, Joshua is not mentioned by name in this verse, which, let's be honest, might seem odd because you connect the story of the walls of Jericho with Joshua and his leadership. He's the leader in charge of this moment. He's the one who God speaks to. But the Hebrew writer leaves his name out on purpose. This is intentional. Why? Because as we begin to unpack the story, a familiar story for many, the walls of Jericho, this miracle, this moment in Israel's history, wasn't about Joshua's faith. It was a moment of shared obedience and shared faith for the entire people of Israel, for the entire people of God. And so before we look at what happened at Jericho, let's remind ourselves a little bit about Joshua and a little bit about Jericho, because I don't want to assume that everybody is familiar with the story itself. So who is Joshua? And again, he is an important person in this story, but the story really isn't about him. So who was he? Well, Joshua was Moses' assistant. He had been with Moses, leading alongside of him during the Exodus out of Egypt and during the journey through the wilderness. He was one of the 12 spies sent in to spy out and explore the promised land. And of the 12 spies, only Joshua and Caleb believed God had given them the land. And so when Moses died, Joshua stepped in as the new leader of Israel. And it was his job, ultimately, to lead the people of God into the land God had promised them and to take that land by faith. And again, this was not an easy assignment for a lot of reasons. The biggest reason is because they weren't walking into a land that was unoccupied. The land was already occupied, and the people, no doubt, were nervous. How are we going to take this land that is already occupied by other people? And so as they began to move closer and closer into that space, they had to face their first battle. They had to face the first city that they had to take possession of. And that city was the city of Jericho. Now again, what was Jericho? Well, Jericho was an important city at the time. It was a fortified city with high walls and a strong military. People actually lived inside of the walls of that city. And we're going to mention that a little bit later, but we're going to focus on a story next week. And it was actually one of the most intimidating sights in all of the ancient world, right? To see the walls around Jericho would have been very intimidating. And so if you're an Israelite, as you begin to approach Jericho, knowing that this is part of the process of possessing the land that God has given you, you've got to take this city. It would have been scary. It would have been intimidating. It would have felt impossible. And so if you're Joshua, this first test wasn't just a battle. It was a stronghold that had to be met by faith. And that's where we want to pick up the story. So now turn back to Joshua chapter 6. Again, familiar story to some, but read it as though it's not familiar. Read it and hear it with fresh eyes, fresh ears, and a fresh openness to what God might want to say. So Joshua 6 begins with these words. Now Jericho was shut up inside and outside because of the people of Israel. They were on their way, so Jericho said, okay, batten down the hatches. Let's circle the wagons. Let's tighten up the bolts, right? And the Lord said to Joshua, see, I have given Jericho into your hand with its king and mighty men of valor. Notice the tense. Notice what God said. He says, I have given. Before the first trumpet sounds, before the first step is taken, God already tells Joshua, it's yours. God declares victory, and that's important. That's important for us to understand. Because God doesn't call us to fight for victory. He invites us to fight from victory. God's promise comes first. And again, we can take stories like this, and I think there's a lot of theology that's bad theology that's drawn from these stories, and we begin to act as though anything that we want is our Jericho wall, and that anything that we desire, God has already said, it's yours. We just need to, in faith, claim it as ours. But that's not the way this worked. God had a purpose. God had a plan. God simply invited Joshua and the people of Israel into his plan. Their response wasn't to create, or their job wasn't to create the plan and then say, God, would you bless this? Their job was to hear from God, know what he wanted, and then begin to walk with that understanding in mind. And that makes a world of difference. But what was the plan? Well, let's read the plan. Verse 3, here's God's plan. He says this to Joshua, you shall march around the city, all the men of war going around the city once. Thus shall you do for 6 days. 7 priests shall bear 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the ark. On the 7th day, you shall march around the city 7 times, and the priests shall blow the trumpets. And when they make a long blast with the ram's horn, when you hear the sound of the trumpet, then all the people shall shout with a great shout, and the wall of the city will fall down. And the people shall go up straightway, or shall go up, everyone straight before him. That's the plan. That's the plan. And act as though you haven't heard the story and know how it ends, just for a minute, because when God gave Joshua these instructions, Joshua wasn't already sitting in a Sunday school class listening to a Sunday school teacher teach him the story of what happened with Joshua. You understand that? He's living it out in real time. This is a first here for Joshua. And can we just be honest and admit this is weird? This is a weird battle plan. March around the city. Say nothing. Do it again the next day. Repeat for 6 days. And on day 7, do it 7 times. Then shout, and the walls will fall down. Can we all just admit this doesn't make sense? This is a horrible military strategy. It's a horrible military plan. But that's the point. This wasn't a military strategy. This wasn't a military plan. This was spiritual formation for the people of God. God was in the process of forming the people of God into the kind of people that he wanted them to become. And so it wasn't necessary for them to have a military strategy in this moment. It was essential, though, that they learned to trust the instructions that God had given to them. God is teaching his people that victory doesn't come from their strength. It doesn't come from their activity. It doesn't come from their wisdom. It doesn't come from their might. Their victory comes from their obedience, from their faith in a God who gave them instructions. And so we're going to read this next passage. It's a little bit lengthy. I'm going to read verse 6 all the way down through verse 14. It'll repeat some of what you've already heard, but let's just read it. It says, so Joshua, the son of Nun, called the priests and said to them, take up the Ark of the Covenant and let 7 priests bear 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the Ark of the Lord. And he said to the people, go forward, march around the city, and let the armed men pass on before the Ark of the Lord. And just as Joshua had commanded the people, Again, that's important. Just as Joshua had commanded the people, here's what happens. The seven priests bearing the seven trumpets of ram's horns before the Lord went forward, blowing the trumpets, with the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord following them. The armed men were walking before the priests who were blowing the trumpets, and the rear guard was walking after the Ark while the trumpets blew continually. But Joshua commanded the people, "You shall not shout or make your voice heard, neither shall any word go out of your mouth until the day I tell you to shout. Then you shall shout." So he caused the Ark of the Lord to circle the city, going about it once, and they came into the camp and spent the night in the camp. Then Joshua rose up early in the morning, and the priests took up the Ark of the Lord. And the seven priests bearing the seven trumpets of the ram's horn before the Ark of the Lord walked on, and they blew the trumpets continually. And the armed men were walking before them, and the rear guard was walking after the Ark of the Lord while the trumpets blew continually. And the second day they marched around the city once and returned into the camp. So they did for 6 days. Again, Joshua doesn't argue with God's instruction. He doesn't try to negotiate or revise a plan. He doesn't come up with a backup plan. He simply relays it to the people, and the people follow. The priests carry the ark and blow the trumpets. The armed guard, the front and the rear of the ark, the people follow in silence, and this happens for 6 days. Again, put yourself in the story. Let your imagination take you into the mind of the people in that moment. They are going around the city, lap after lap, watching as absolutely nothing happens. Watching as perhaps people in Jericho begin to climb up the wall and pierce over. Maybe starting to say, I don't know what they're doing. Maybe they've all lost their mind. Maybe they're laughing at them. Maybe they're ridiculing them for being afraid. Come on, don't you want to fight? But they say nothing. And again, people are people. I'm sure as guys are just walking in silence, somebody's looking at each other like, what are we doing? What is this? Shut up. Joshua said to just shut up, be quiet. I don't want us to get in trouble. Okay. And just walking. Just imagine the moment. Imagine the scene. What would you have thought? Who would you have been tempted to pull aside and say, why are we even doing this? This doesn't make sense. Because again, for 6 days, there's no sign that anything is working. They're just marching, obeying, and trusting God. But here's the thing. That's what bold faith looks like at times. Sometimes it's simply doing what God asks you to do, even when it feels pointless. Sometimes it's just doing what God asks you to do, even when we don't see progress. Again, let's pull back and think about this story. This story is not about one man's faith. It's about the communal obedience of an entire people. The people of Israel had to believe God together. They had to walk together. They had to stay quiet together. They had to shout together. If one group broke ranks, if one part gave up, if somebody had started planting the seeds of doubt and disillusionment, right, and disunity, this plan would have fallen apart. This moment, the falling of the walls of Jericho, took unified faith. And I think that's why the author of Hebrews doesn't mention Joshua by name, because this story isn't about him. See, the walls didn't fall because of a man of God. Write this down. The walls fell because of the people of God. Communal faith. Communal faith. Let's pick up reading in verse 15. I'm going to read down to verse 20. It says, on the seventh day, they rose early at the dawn of day and marched around the city in the same manner seven times. It was only on that day that they marched around the city seven times. And at the seventh time, when the priests had blown the trumpets, Joshua said to the people, shout, for the Lord has given you the city. And the city and all that is within it shall be devoted to the Lord for destruction. Only Rahab the prostitute and all who are with her in her house shall live, because she hid the messengers whom we sent. We'll talk about Rahab next week. But you, keep yourselves from the things devoted to destruction, lest when you have devoted them, you take any of the devoted things and make the camp of Israel a thing for destruction and bring trouble upon it. But all silver and gold and every vessel of bronze and iron are holy to the Lord. They shall go into the treasury of the Lord. Again, verse 20 now. So the people shouted and the trumpets were blown. And as soon as the people heard the sound of the trumpet, the people shouted a great shout and the wall fell down flat. So that the people went up into the city, every man straight before him, and they captured the city. Again, this is not a Sunday school story. It's not a flannel graph visual. This happened. God took down the walls of a city because the people of God were obedient. They had faith to believe together. And that's what Hebrews 11:30 is celebrating when the Hebrew writer says, by faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they had been encircled for 7 days. It was their collective faith that brought the miracle. Now again, this is not an isolated moment in the scriptures where God's power moves through a unified people. Throughout the Bible, we see that some of God's most incredible works happened not simply through and with individuals, but through communities who carried out bold obedience, bold faith. Again, go back in Exodus chapter 14, the Red Sea didn't part just for Moses. He wasn't the only one who walked across. The sea parted for an entire nation who walked through in unity together, trusting that God would see them through to the other side. I think about the story of Nehemiah when God called a man to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. If you read the story of Nehemiah, it wasn't just one man with a hammer. Nehemiah was able to cast vision and pull people together, families and priests and goldsmiths and merchants. All of them worked side by side to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem that were destroyed. Fast forward into the New Testament, Acts 2. The Holy Spirit comes. The Holy Spirit didn't just fall on Peter and the apostles. It fell on everyone who was gathered in that place, who with one heart were waiting for God to give them instructions, waiting to step out in obedience. Fast forward in Acts chapter 4, verses 32 through 35, we read about the early church and how they were of one heart and soul. They were of one heart and mind. They were sharing everything that they had so that nobody among them was in need. And Luke records this, that there was great grace that was upon them all. Why? Because they were in unity. See, this idea of what I want to convey today of communal faith isn't just a footnote in the Bible. It's repeated from beginning to end. The reality is that God often works through unity, through shared sacrifice, and through communities of people who decide together to follow His lead, even when it's hard, even when it doesn't make sense, even if it appears as though nothing is happening, no progress is being made, they just agree, we're going to march together. We're going to do this together for as long as it takes for God to move, for God to do what we believe He has called us to do as a community of faith. But, and here's an important part this morning, when it comes to communal faith, everyone has a part to play. Write that down. When it comes to this idea of communal faith, everyone has a part to play. The fall of Jericho didn't depend on a single warrior or one man's shout or one priest carrying a corner of the ark. It took everyone. The priests had to do their part. The ark bearers had to lift the ark. The people, again, had to march in silence. They all had to raise their voices together. No one person's faith brought about the fall. It was their shared, synchronized, unified faith in what God had called them to do. And here we are thousands of years later. And what was true of God's people in that moment is still true of our community of faith today. We are not the children of Israel, and there's not a fortified city that God is calling us to march around in silence so that the walls will fall down. But God has walls for us. God has a call for us. And everybody who calls Zion home has a part to play in that. Some of you are carrying trumpets. You're the people who lead and serve with joy and worship and encouragement. Some of you are carrying the ark. You bring leadership and prayer and can unpack the scriptures. You bring a maturity and wisdom to the body. Others, again, some of you like this this distinction. Some of you are marching. You simply see yourself as the individual, the person who just shows up week to week, faithful, serving, marching, doing their part. You don't need to be pointed out. You don't need to be elevated. You're just being faithful. And every part matters. Communal faith calls for everyone to do something. We need all of you. Faith communities like Zion, churches, is never a solo act. It's always shared. So, again, the question that we want to ask today, and no, this doesn't have anything, well, I shouldn't say nothing, this doesn't have anything. This message was being prepared before we started asking the question about 2 weeks of Penn West Kids Camp. So don't say, oh, this is Trent's message about going to 2 weeks. It's not. All right, we can apply that, we can have that conversation, but let me just pull back a little bit broader and just ask this question. We'll put it up on the screen. What kind of wall could fall if we all walked in faith together as a church? What kind of wall? Again, the story, this message, this moment in Israel's history helps us to recognize that sometimes miracles don't come through individual heroism, but through shared obedience. Again, think about Kids Camp. It's on our mind, right? Think about this past week. It took over 50 students and adults to give their time, to give their energy, for some to give up vacation, to lose money because you just took time off work. But you did it so that kids could learn about Jesus. One person didn't make that happen. It wasn't my thing, wasn't Cameron's thing, wasn't Danielle's thing. It wasn't any one person's thing. It took communal faith beyond Penn West Kids Camp. Again, think about the commitment that we made back in 2016. Some of you were here in 2016, and you know the intentional, directional decision that we made to focus on becoming a church that makes disciples who can make disciples. That was not an easy decision. That was not something that was an instantaneous, okay, now we're going to do it, and we see the fruit of it. There have been many weeks and months, and I'll even say years, that when it comes to our disciple-making plan, our disciple-making strategy, man, it just feels like we're walking in silence around a wall. We're not seeing the kind of progress that we think we should be seeing. We're not seeing enough people getting into D groups. We're not seeing D groups multiplying. We're not seeing people, because of their D groups, stepping out in different ways that maybe we had envisioned. But we're gonna keep walking. We're gonna keep moving. We're gonna keep trusting. We're gonna keep walking around that wall, trusting that God is going to bring fruit. But it takes everybody, right? I told you unapologetically, we want everybody in a D group. And if you call Zion home, you should be in a D group. If this is the place that you say this, and I'm not even talking about membership, but if you're like, this is my home, this is where I want to grow in my faith, I'm telling you as a pastor, get into a D group. It is the best environment, better than listening to me on a Sunday morning. Getting into a D group is a great place for you to grow in your faith. But there are other walls in our community. When we think about what are the walls, my mind goes back to foster and adoption. Years ago when we started leaning into foster and adoption because we saw that as a wall. Something in our community that needed to be addressed. And many have fostered and many have chosen adoption and God has birthed Keystone Family Alliance here in our community. And many of you are not fostering now, but you care about it. You're not thinking about adoption right now, but you're supportive of those who do. That's something that takes all of us to engage in. I think about mental health issues and again, how over the years we've tried to destigmatize and be able to be honest and have conversations about the mental health crisis and the needs in our community. And we've tried to be a church that again, doesn't add guilt or shame for those who struggle, but we try to walk alongside those who have mental health issues that they're struggling and dealing with. And we want to continue to do that because we see that as a wall that collectively together we can address and help speak to in our community. Beyond that, we think about food insecurity and generational poverty and the way we're gonna continue to provide food for people in need and how we're championing Love Inc. of Clarion County, walking alongside of Angelo, who can't do Love Inc. alone. As a matter of fact, Love Inc. is a great example of communal faith, not just of our church, but the communal faith of churches in our community who can come alongside of each other and walk around the wall of our community, of people who have real needs, real issues, real struggles that only the gospel of Jesus Christ can address. Not a human service agency, not any of the great organizations in our community who do good work but aren't able to build the gospel into it. That's why we're partnering with Love Inc., why we believe in and why we're investing in Angelo, because it takes communal faith to make a difference in our community. Again, what if we continue to march together as a church? Where and how can we make a difference? What if we said, I'm not going to just attend that church, but I'm going to be part of that church. I'm going to find my place in that church, and I'm going to march with that church and address the things that they feel called to, even if it feels slow and strange or uncertain. What if we became a church who said, we're in this together? One of the beautiful things about communal faith, which is what we're talking about, is that if we are sharing this common enemy, this common wall that we're trying to deal with, when you individually feel like quitting, someone else is there to help you continue marching, to have your corner of the ark. When you're tired, someone else's trumpet can still blow. When you're silent, someone else is still walking with you. Together, together, together. Zion, what is our next Jericho moment? What is the next wall? I don't know. I don't know what it is, but I do know this. I believe in you. And I believe that when we collectively feel like God is calling us to do something, we will march. We will go. We will keep rank. We will, even if it feels uncertain or we sense like I don't see progress as quickly, we'll do it because I've seen you do it time and time again over the years. And I've seen you and we have seen God bring down walls. And so what if our next Jericho moment is waiting around the corner, but God hasn't shown it to us yet because he's waiting for all of us to say, I'm in. I want to be a part of what God's doing here. What if the next Jericho moment is about helping our community experience the love and power of Jesus? So let's dream a little bit. I believe that we're just scratching the surface when it comes to the impact that we can have on kids in our community. What's keeping us from having greater impact? More people marching. What if we became the church as the place where kids can find hope, where they can find answers, where families can find support and encouragement when it comes to discipling their kids? What if Zion becomes the place where kids who are often overlooked are looked at and are valued in our community because we're committed to them? And not just kids, but our student ministry. What God is doing right now, what he's raising up in Momentum Student Ministry and our collaboration, the communal faith of Zion and First Baptist Church is amazing. But we're just scratching the surface. What if some more people answered the call to invest in students and pulled Spencer and Chelsea aside and said, I'm ready to march around the wall with you. I want to help you disciple and reach out to students who need mentors, who need to be discipled. What if we raised up a generation of disciple makers? Not just people who lead a group. And again, we need leaders, but your mindset is I want to disciple these individuals that sit in my circle to a point that they're confident that they can do the same thing with others. Because that's when the movement begins, is when you start discipling for the next generation. What if we looked at our community's deepest needs, continued looking at them, fostering and adoption, mental health, food insecurity, generational poverty, and instead of saying, man, that's an issue that's too big for us. Look at us, we're only a church of 150, 175 people. What can we possibly do? What if we begin to say, you know what? That's it, that's the next wall, that's the next place that we need to continue, or we need to start focusing in on, or continue focusing in on. And again, it's not going to happen because of a pastor, because of a program. It will happen because we do what we do together. So let's be that kind of church. Let's be that kind of church. Because the walls still fall for people who will walk in faith together. Again, it's not dependent upon me. It's not dependent upon the elders. It's dependent upon all of us. So as the worship team comes, this week, I want you to answer these three questions, or think about them at least. Question number one, where is God calling us to obey together? And again, vision doesn't always have to start top down. Many of us, we've been friends for years and years and years. Vision for me is easy. I can dream pretty easily about stuff. But the vision that God writes on our heart doesn't have to come from me. It can come from you. It can come from the collective body. But you need to be willing to dream and think and pray. What do you see God calling us to do as a church family? And then the next question, what part do I need to play in what God is doing currently? There's plenty of stuff he's doing currently. What is your part? And then who can I encourage to keep marching? Who do you see, man, that's engaged in tearing down the walls that the enemy has put up? That you say, I just need to encourage them. And then, whatever it is, the answer, however you answer that, take a step. Link arms with others. Blow the trumpet. Carry the ark. Trust that God is at work. Even in those silent days and weeks and months, he's still working. So we're going to sing a song. And we're going to prepare for communion. And I'm going to do something. Don't get freaked out by it, please. We teach communion as not just an individual thing. It's a communal thing. So we're going to communally take communion today. So what are you getting at, Trent? Here's what I want us to do. And no, I'm not going to make you march. I promise. But what I would like for you to do, and it's going to be organic and it's going to feel a little bit messy, and the worship team is going to be like, hey, this feels like us just singing because you guys are working on something. What I'd like us to do is I'd like for us to take communion in a circle. I'd like for us to get in a circle so that we can look at each other, right? And I think we can, I'm just looking at the numbers today, we probably don't need to go around the whole room. We can probably go in the back, this row, into the front, and this row. So the best that you can, and those of you who are, you know, high, what's the word? What's that? Not tall. You're like, you need everything like lined up, right? There, you're Marcus Bingham. Have at it. Now, so those of you who like lines and rows and everything's got to be squared away, just kind of just nudge people. Help us. So help us to do that. So here's what we'll do is we'll do that. I didn't script this all out. I have it in my head. So what let's do? Let's do that. And then once we're kind of in a circle, then we'll just pass the elements around. So you don't have to come and get your element. You can just circle up, and then we'll pass the elements around, all right? But while you're doing, look at this, I'm like, and also sing. So you're intelligent, you're smart people. You can do all the things that I've just asked you to do. I am confident in that. And like I said, you guys might just be singing to us. We may not be singing with you. All right. Father, we love you. Thank you for the day. Thank you for the opportunity to listen and grow together. God, use this time to help us see the value of communal faith and bear fruit in days to come. In Jesus' name, amen. Let's do what we talked about doing.
Change to